28 years. Okay, so the Gemara was trying to find a Tana that would be like the Amora, who says that you don't, the main part of Bikurim offering is the bringing and not the reading. He was trying to get a proof from a Braisa. And the Braisa was trying to find out nowadays is there ability to bring Meiser Sheni to Yerushalayim or not. And they wanted, and weren't sure about it. So they said, well, we know by a Bechor cannot be done. It can only be done in the Beis HaMikdash. So maybe it's going to be like a Bechor. So he said, no, it can't be like a Bechor. Bechor has a stringency that Meiser Sheni doesn't have. Then it says, okay, that it has to be brought as a korban by the Mizbech. You need the Mizbech. We don't have the Mizbech, so we don't do it. But that doesn't tell us anything about a Meiser Sheni, which doesn't need a Mizbech. Well, how about maybe we'll learn it from Bikurim. Where Bikurim, we don't bring when there's no Beis HaMikdash. So maybe we won't bring Meiser Sheni when there's no Beis HaMikdash. And we said, no, Bikurim also has something special. That what? That you have to place it in front of the Mizbech. To which the Braisa said, well, that's still not going to be a good proof, because maybe that's the stringency, right? So it's not a proof from Bikurim, because it's stricter that you have to put it down on the Mizbech. Then the Gemara concluded, well, we're going to learn it from the fact that it's mixed in the Pasuk, Hekesh, that it mentions in all the Pasuk, it mentions Meiser Sheni, it mentions Bechor, Bikurim, and just like the others in the Pasuk aren't brought when there's no Beis HaMikdash, so too, Meiser Sheni's not brought if there's no Beis HaMikdash. That's a Pasuk, that's not logic, so that's going to be the proof. We don't bring Meiser Sheni to Yerushalayim nowadays. That was the end of the Braisa. Gemara says the proof that Tana holds, that reading is not critical, because when the Braisa said we can't learn Meiser Sheni from Bikurim, because Bikurim needs to be placed by the Mizbeach, why didn't it say we don't learn it from Bikurim? Because Bikurim must be read before the Mizbeach. Why didn't it say that as the reason why you couldn't learn Meiser Sheni from Bikurim? Must be that Tana holds that reading is not necessary. And that's a proof that it's not the reading that's not necessary, but the placement is necessary. And that would seem to be the Tana who holds with that view. Okay, that's how we left it yesterday. The Gemara says it's not a proof. It's not a proof. And I'll show you why it's not a proof. The fact that it did not mention reading is not a proof. Because let's think about it anyway. Even if, the Gemara I was going to ask, let me just make it a little bit bigger here. Gemara says, one second, that was the proof. I'm sorry, that was, now. Omer Ravashi, so Ravashi says, no, you don't have a proof from that. The implication isn't such. Why? So let's think about it. Even if you're going to say that the reading is not critical, but isn't it something you should be doing?
Yeah.
Now, remember we said there's things, there's the mitzvah, and then there's the critical part of the mitzvah. Now, everybody agrees there's a mitzvah to bring it to Yerushalayim. It's a mitzvah to put it down before the Mizbeach, and there's a mitzvah to read the Pesukim. You're not going to deny that. Okay, now there's a detail. But what if you didn't do it? Okay, now, is it forbidden to eat it? Not forbidden to eat it? Okay, you could have a machlokes if the reading is critical or if the placing down is critical. But when we are trying to say there's a reason why we can't learn Meiser Sheni from Bikurim, and we want to knock off the comparison by saying because Bikurim has a stringency that had to do with the Mizbech that Meiser Sheni doesn't have. Now, so what do we say the stringency was? The placement, right? Why didn't it say the reading? Okay, but let's ask a simple question. Even if without the reading you wouldn't get lashed, but isn't it something you should have been doing anyway?
Yeah.
Isn't it a mitzvah to do it anyway? So why couldn't he have said, that's a question on the Braisa alone, why didn't he say that Bikurim needs placement and reading? Forget about one is vitally necessary, one isn't vitally necessary, but they're both should have been done. So you see this astringency by Rabbi Korm. So it's a question just of understanding the Braisa. Forget about any proofs. Forget about any proofs right now. He's going to say, how do we understand the Braisa? Why didn't it say that Bikurim is different, that it requires placement and reading? Doesn't it require it?
Yes.
The fact that the reading won't make it that you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah, but isn't it required, though? Isn't it required mitzvah? So say that's a difference anyway. We're debating whether, well, if you don't read it, is it a question you get lashed for eating it beforehand or not? It's so important that you can't go without it. Fine. Even if you can't go without it, but isn't it a mitzvah anyway to do it? And there's a mitzvah that requires something to do with the mizbech, even if after the fact it's okay, but still there's a mitzvah. So why didn't the Braisa say that Bikurim has both of these aspects? One maybe is has to be, but the other one also should be. So why didn't we bring both? And that's what it's going to ask. And you'll see from the answer why we're going to say there's no proof. Amar Rav Ashi. Nehidi kuvalaka. Granted, let's say that reading isn't essential. Okay, let's say reading isn't essential. But even if it's not essential, clearly, mitzvah lo mleka, isn't it at least a mitzvah? And if it's a mitzvah, then, that obvious is there. Velema, so let's say mitzvah velichbrach. Apparently, let Rabbi Shmuel mention the mitzvah exists, even though it's not going to hold you back from fulfilling the mitzvah, from being able to eat the bikurim, but at least mention it and refute it with both points. So he should have said, what comparison can be made to bikurim which require placement before the altar and initially recitation of the verses in order to be prepared for consumption, whether Maaser Sheni doesn't? Okay? Besides the initial requirement, in our case, the lack of recital may actually render the bikurim forbidden from other sites in the brackets. I'm not going to go to the brackets. But anyway, but isn't there a stringency that bikurim has over Maaser Sheni that, number one, you must place it, and number two, you must initially read it. Even though at the end, if you didn't read it, it's still okay, but there's an initial mitzvah. What does Maaser Sheni have initially even? There's 2 points. It's initially, it's a mitzvah to do it. Then, okay, and there's another point to placing that. If you don't do it, then it's going to hold you back from performing from at all. But at least an initially is also something that's different. So you're saying stringencies, so why didn't it mention that either? Thus, even ascribing to Rabbi Shmuel the view that recital is non-essential does not account for his failure to mention it as a temple-related feature existing with Bikurim, but not Maaser Sheni. So why didn't he say it? Forget about you bringing me proofs. Why didn't he say it? Rather, there must be some other reason why he omitted mention of recital, and accordingly, no inference can be drawn from here regarding his view on the essentiality of the recital of Bikurim. In other words, forget about you trying to approve. Forget anything. Just how do we understand this Braisa? How do you understand Braisa? Why wouldn't you mention the recitation, which is initially a mitzvah? There must have been a reason he didn't. And what was the reason? There must have been a reason. Elam Ravashi. So Ravashi says, I'll tell you why. We only can mention things that for sure must be under every possible situation. Right. Now, where do you have after where sugars you don't have? Oh, that's amazing you thought of that. Gemara doesn't say it, though. Really? Gemara doesn't say it. It's going to say another case. And it's interesting why it didn't say that. You know why I know? Because it's not in 100% of the cases of the people. Ella, but what? Kivan de Ika Bikure Hager. What if a ger, a convert, brings Bikurim? At the right time. Does a convert say the psukim of Arami Obed Avi, an Aramean tried to destroy my father Yaakov Avinu? He can't say that. Although a convert is like a regular born Jew in almost every single way, but there's certain things you cannot change reality. His great-great-grandfather was not Yaakov, and therefore he can't read it. Okay.
How's he daven?
So that's a good... Well, he can daven. So that's a whole question. That's a whole question. At the end of the day, he does. There is a whole issue on that. Mm-hmm. Okay? Okay. So, you know, for example, I'll ask you a better question. How does a blind person say Pokeach Ivri? But he does.
Well, he says it anyway.
Sure. Why? Because Hashem opens the eyes to all the other people in the world. Yeah. And because all the other people can see, they could help him out. Yeah. Shouldn't he bless God for sight? Because if the Canadian Society for the Blind didn't exist, who's going to take him around? Who's going to rehabilitate him? So he's doing that. So therefore, the convert can say the same thing, that, you know, I'm part of a community who's the God of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov.
Makes sense.
And the God of our fathers, meaning I'm part of the Jewish people, though it's not my father. Anyway, so that's a whole discussion. But either way, that's for those blessings are rabbinic by nature. Those blessings, so rabbinic blessings we can fudge. You know, the rabbis make a decree. Remember, biblically, you don't make these brachas. You don't daven. Biblically, you don't say brachas, period. Except benching. Besides that, so the rabbi said, you know, say brachas. So the rabbis now listed all the brachas say in davening. So the rabbis listed, they can make the rules the way they want, remember? So they're going to say, we're making the rules, and every Jew should say, he's not exactly, yeah, but he's part of the community and this and that. But when you're getting into a biblical level, there's not a lot of room to manipulate. When God says, you're going to say, well, you can't say that's what God said to do, so therefore you can't do it. Therefore, a ger brings Bikurim, but can't read it. One second. Because why wouldn't he say it? Because a regular Jew has to say to Boila Meimar, because what's part of the recitation? If that whole psukim is Asher Nishba Lavoseinu, I've come to the land that God has promised to our fathers, and other things like that. V'lo Motzi Omar, he can't say it. So therefore, it comes out, we can't say across the board that every single Jew reads. On the other hand, every single Jew, even the convert, has to bring Ma'aser Sheni Yerushalayim. So if you want to show how Bikurim is stricter than Ma'aser Sheni, we have to pick something that will work 100 times out of 100. Everybody's got to place it down. Everyone's got to place it down. Not everybody's got to read. So therefore, since it's not every single time, so lo psika le, he didn't say that as one of the things we have to do, because it's not always there. That's why he omitted it, for a side reason. So now there's no proof. So therefore, since the recital is not performed in all cases, Rabbi Shaul mentioned only the placement, for which there's no exceptions. And he says, that's the reason why Bikurim can't be eaten when the temple is destroyed, because you can't learn from Bikurim, because we can't put it down. But what about drawing? Now you can't deduce. Oh, because since he didn't say you have to read it, must be reading isn't important. No, he had a better reason why he didn't put reading in. So therefore, we can't deduce by the fact that he omitted the reading that the reading is not essential. So if it's a question of essentiality, maybe Shmuel maintains recital is essential. Maybe it is. You have to have it. So why do you mention it? Because it doesn't apply all the time. Now, you have a very good question, Steve, which I don't see him bringing any commentary on that. Why didn't they mention if you bring it?
Well, no.
If you bring it after Sukkos.
Yeah. And you don't recite.
It was put earlier. But not.
No.
When you said what
happened with the children of the convert? They can say it?
Say what?
The prayer.
Could be not. Let's see, there's one more thing. I'm sorry, let's go back. So let's just look at it this way. The rule that a proselyte brings Bikurim but does not recite the verse is the opinion of the Mishnah Bikurim that we just quoted. The halacha, however, does not follow that Mishnah and is that a proselyte brings Bikurim and recites the verse. So it seems as a machlokes, because even proselytes are considered children of our forefather Avram, who God declared a father of a multitude of nations. Av Hamon, this week's Parsha. When Hashem changed his name from Avram to Avraham, Avram meant that you were like the father of Aram.
Yeah.
Avraham means you're a father of a multitude of nations. For this reason, too, proselytes say, "Can we have a say no in the davening?" And also, "Shein chal tolav a say no," because he is still like a father of the whole world. Nevertheless, Rav Ashi's explanation is valid because there are numerous other cases which Bikurim are brought, but the verses are not recited. And now we have your example, let's say, if you bring it after Sukkot. In conclusion, then, the Brisa does not support Rav Sheshis' assertion that Rishmol considers the recital of verses non-essential, even in a case where it is commanded. No proof from the Brisa. We wanted to say, oh, we'll show you Tanu holds that reading is essential. Because why did he leave it out? The answer is the reason why he left it out, because it doesn't apply in all cases. So really, we could stop this and be finished. We're discussing the issue of Bikurim. We're discussing the issue whether reading is a requirement that has to be or not. We wanted to bring a proof from the Brisa, and we didn't bring a proof from the Brisa. So we should be turning the page, moving on to the next piece of Gemara. Gemara says, no. Once we already brought the Brisa, and we brought the question and answer, and we're not happy with the way the Bryce is reading, so now we're going to exclusively be focused on some issues in the Bryce. Remember, what was the issue of the Bryce? What's the law with Bikurim nowadays when there's no Beis HaMikdash? Not Bikurim, Meister Sheni. What's the law with Meister Sheni when there's no Beis HaMikdash? Do we bring Yerushalayim or not? So we tried to bring a proof from Bechor. We said, just like a Bechor doesn't bring. So my shame, no, Bechor is different. You have to sprinkle blood on Mizbeach. Okay, let's learn from Bikurim. Bikurim doesn't bring it now. Maybe that should bring it out. No, we can't learn from that because it has to be placed before the Mizbeach. Therefore, we had no logical deductions. We had to come up to a pasuk. So now, that was the end of the Brisa. So we dealt with trying to bring a proof, no proof. Now, more are saying, well, wait a minute. Why did the Brisa give up so easily on trying to make logical deduction and had to fall back to a pasuk? Why did you stop the logical process? This could have been better, another proof the Brisa could have brought before it had to resort to bringing the pasuk. That's what the Gemara is going to do now. And so it's going to be two questions of understanding on the Brisa, and this is the first one. So wait a minute. So what do we have a rule? When you try to learn A from B, and you say, well, you can't learn A from B because B is a stringency. Can't learn A from C? Well, C has stringency. What's the next step we usually take? Well, why don't we try to learn from the common denominator from B and C together? Because what B has, C doesn't have, and what C has, B doesn't have. So maybe you can learn from B and C because you say, well, I can't learn from B because B has this special stringency. Yeah, but C doesn't have that special stringency, and yet we don't do it. Well, because C has a special stringency that B doesn't have, and therefore he can't bring it. Well, yeah, but B doesn't have that stringency either. So we have a rule. If you can't learn A from B because B has a stringency over A, and you can't learn A from C because C has stringency over A, but the fact that C or B has this stringency, but B doesn't have the stringency of C, and C doesn't have the stringency of B, and therefore you can learn from B and C together from the fact they don't have the other one's stringency. So why can't I learn from that? And that's what one is going to ask. Why did the Brisa give up so easily and fall into a pasuk? So let's forget about, let the reasoning resume. Let's stick with the reason before we're going to fall into the pasuk. Vitaisi and derive it, what we call a bema'atzad. Ma'atzad means this common characteristic. It's the famous, okay, we've got to review this. We've done this before. This type of analogy known as ma'atzad, you read it this morning by your Rabbi Shmuel Omer, is called a binyanav mishnei ksuvim. Let's go over this. A binyanav usually means a general principle. Like we say, well, just like you see, by this mitzvah is such a law, so we can say other mitzvahs are the same, and has, we don't have to keep repeating this same idea. Now, we could say, yeah, we can learn A from B, as long as they're kind of similar. Once I show, well, B is really different, it's got a much bigger stringency, I can't learn A from B. Okay, so I can't learn it. That is binyanav. But what if I'm trying to learn from two different halachas? So here it's called, a general principle derived from two verses is based on the assumption that if two cases enjoy a similar law, that law stems from a common characteristic shared by both cases, not from any unique feature that is unique to either of them. Thus, all other cases sharing that characteristic can be assumed to have the same law, even if they differ from each of the individual laws that serve as the model. In our case, Although the Bechor offering and Bikurim each possess a unique feature that Maaser Sheni does not have, the Bechor's blood has to be sprinkled, Bikurim have to be placed before the altar. That's something Maaser Sheni couldn't learn from each one. But these factors, features, are not identical to both Bechor and to Bikurim. Thus, we must view the common rule that they may not be eaten after destruction as related to their common characteristic of being permitted for consumption only in Jerusalem. Okay? You hear what's going on over here? Their common characteristic is they can't be eaten after the base of Mikdash is destroyed. Bikurim and Bechor cannot be eaten after the base of Mikdash was destroyed. So that's common. And what's also common, because you only could eat them in Yerushalayim.
Yes.
That's common. They both can only eat in the Yerushalayim, can't be eaten when the base is destroyed. So let's say Bikurim is like that too, can only be eaten in Yerushalayim, and therefore it cannot be eaten after the base is destroyed. That is, you can say, well, no, but you couldn't learn from Bechor, because Bechor sprinkles the blood. You never sprinkle blood. Fine. But you don't sprinkle blood by Bikurim. Yet Bikurim, you still can't eat it nowadays. Why? Because it has to be in Yerushalayim. I couldn't learn straight from Bikurim because Bikurim has a unique thing. You have to place it down before the altar. Fine. But Bechor doesn't have to be placed down before the altar. There is a common denominator between Bechor and Bikurim is that nowadays they're not eaten when there's no Beis HaMikdash. Why? The common denominator was because they have to be eaten in Yerushalayim. That is the common denominator. Now, what about Maaser Sheni? Same common denominator. Maaser Sheni must be eaten in Yerushalayim. Same common denominator. So I guess you can't eat it nowadays when there's no Beis HaMikdash. That's what we're saying.
Is it because Jerusalem or because Beis HaMikdash? Which one is it?
The issue is,
there,
can you eat it when there's no Beis HaMikdash? When there's no Beis HaMikdash. When there's no Beis HaMikdash, can you eat something still in Yerushalayim and fulfill the mitzvah in Yerushalayim? So we're saying, that was our Shaila. By Maaser Sheni, can you eat it? Can you fulfill the mitzvah by going to Yerushalayim and eating the Maaser Sheni Yerushalayim after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed? After Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. Well, let's learn from Bechor. Bechor is something that has to be eaten in Yerushalayim.
Sprinkle.
But we know that when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, you don't eat it in Yerushalayim. You don't do it.
But you don't do it because there's no Mizbeach.
I understand. So we said, but it had a stringency of Mizbeach. That's why we initially didn't learn it straight alone from Bechor. Right? Remember, you can't learn A from B, even though there's commonality, if B has a stringency that A didn't have. Maybe that's because of the stringency we don't eat it there. Right? So therefore, it had a stringency of sprinkling the blood. Okay, so I can't learn Maaser Sheni from Bechor. Good. I can't learn Maaser Sheni Bikurim, because Bikurim has an extra stringency. You got to place it before the Mizbeach.
Right.
Fine. But forget about that. Why can't I learn Maaser Sheni from the common denominator of Bechor and Bikurim, which is they have to be in Yerushalayim?
Yes.
That's it. So just like they have to be in Yerushalayim, and when there's no Beis HaMikdash, the mitzvah doesn't apply. So same thing, Maaser Sheni has to be eaten in Yerushalayim, and when there's no Beis HaMikdash, it doesn't apply. The other one had a certain stringency, but that can't be the reason because of the stringency we don't need it there, because the other one didn't have that stringency, yet you still don't need it there. So what's the common denominator? The common denominator is Bikurim Bechor have to be in Yerushalayim. That's it. That's the common denominator. Beis HaMikdash destroyed. You don't have to misapply anymore. Well, Bikurim shares the Maaser Sheni shares the same common denominator. And although it's not exactly like Bechor and not exactly Bikurim, but it's exactly like the common denominator. You hear? That's how you do such learning. Right? So therefore, the Gemara shouldn't have given up so easily and say you can't learn Maaser Sheni from something else. Rather, had to resort to a pasuk. Why did you have to resort to the pasuk? Yes, I can't learn it from Bechor alone. I can't learn from Bikurim alone. But the common denominator is what makes them similar. Okay? That is the question. Okay, which we're going to get an answer in a second. Yeah, what's bothering you?
So you have to eat the Purim or before, you have to eat Yerushalayim, but you can't eat it because you can't do
Because there is no Beis HaMikdash. Right. Because there is no Beis HaMikdash. Forget it.
There's nothing else you have to do with Meisr Sheni, and Yerushalayim is still here.
There's no Beis HaMikdash. We see it's connected. We see it's connected.
But it doesn't require a Beis HaMikdash. The other ones do.
Yeah.
So how can you use...
Okay, so Gomorrah's going to give an answer similar to your answer. Not exactly, but it's sort of the same thing. Sort of... That's your question. Well, the question is the answer. Your question is the answer to the question.
Okay.
No, because the Gemara asks a question. Why did the Braisa give up so easily? Why didn't it learn from both? So you're saying, I don't understand the question. Well, really what you're saying is, I'm going to answer your question. That's why it didn't do it.
No, that's
all I'm saying is...
What you're doing is, you're answering the Gemara's question. Right?
You're saying why you can't.
Asking your question.
Why can't I learn this? So you're giving me an answer, aren't you? When you ask a question on my question, that's answering my question. So that's basically the answer. Mishum, because we can ask a question on this way of learning. Let's learn from the common denominator, because there's, you can break the common denominator. What's this? There's still a common denominator that Meister Sheni doesn't share with those two. You're right, it shares the fact if there's no Beis HaMikdash, you don't bring it. But there was another common denominator that Bechor and Bikurim have that Meister Sheni doesn't have, and that's why you're not going to be able to learn from that. And what's that? Shekein Yesh Bem Tzad Mizbeach. They both have something to do with a Mizbeach. Even though one is sprinkling and one is placing, but the common denominator between Bikurim and Bechor is you have to have a Mizbeach to fulfill the mitzvah. One for sprinkling, one for placing. Meisr Sheni has no requirement. So you were basically saying, it had to do with the Beis HaMikdash. Gemara is more specific. It has to do with the Mizbeach. So that is the answer to the question. Okay. Meisr Sheni has no altar aspect involved in its procedure. It cannot be derived from them. Therefore, Bishmol needed to resort to a scriptural source for its law. So now we have an understanding of the Braisa, why we gave up trying to get it from a Mahatzad, but rather we had to come on to a scriptural pasuk. That answers the first question of the analysis of the Braisa. We're not going to have time to fully get into the second. We'll just start for 2-3 minutes. And the Gemara is going to ask again on the Braisa, and it's going to say, I don't even understand the question from the beginning. Because there's a lot of assumptions that have to be made over here. And whichever way you're going to look at it, I don't understand how the Gemara, the Braisa, even attempted to... The Braisa is starting with this assumption that Bikurim and Bechor, it seems pretty clear, no Beis HaMikdash, you don't bring it. That... No problem with that. They just assume that. And then it says, but Meisr Sheni, we're not sure. So now the question is, there's some overall issues that have to be discussed. And if you look at the overall issues to be discussed, why are you even having a question that Meisr Sheni should be different? It should fall into line to whatever you say is Bechor Bikurim for more general issues that you haven't addressed. And what are the general issues? So let's go back. Mike is over. What did the author of the Braisa initially understand? Well, see, what does Rishon hold that caused him to draw this distinction between Bechor offering and Meisr Sheni? Why is he just saying that it's just a given that Bechor not and Meisr Sheni, I'm not sure? Right? That was the initial question. We're trying to learn Meisr, I'm not sure to try to learn from Bechor. Why are you so sure that Bechor was for sure not and Meisr was a doubt? Let's go back here. As explained earlier, Rav Shmuel could not have interpreted scripture as linking Meisr Sheni to Bechor unless he somehow knew that the Bechor is inherently forbidden for consumption, but did not know this regarding Meisr Sheni. Right? That's his whole question. He must have known that Bechor for sure can't be done when there's no Beis HaMikdash. Meisr Sheni wasn't sure. Right? So, but what was that on what basis? So, to properly understand the Gemara's ensuing discussion, There's a little introduction. Let's just do the introduction now, and then tomorrow we'll pick it up from the introduction. Very important. There's a question whether the initial sanctity took effect for its time and for all future time. When the Jews sanctified Eretz Yisrael and the Temple Mount, was that a temporary sanctification, meaning as long as we're there? Or was the sanctification an eternal sanctification? There's a machlokes in the Gemara, so to speak. This question divides into two distinct categories: the sanctity land of Israel, the sanctity of the temple site. In regard to the sanctity land of Israel, this question relates to whether the laws dependent on the land of Israel, such as Trumas Maisis, which came into effect when the Jews originally took the possession of Israel, remain biblically applicable to Israel even after they should have been exiled from the land. If the original sanctity remains for all times, then these laws are always biblically enforced. If the sanctity ceases with the exile, these laws cease to be biblically applicable as well. That's question number one. It could be, even if it's not sanctified biblically, maybe rabbinically the rabbis say, you know what, even though there's no mitzvah, we want you to do it anyway so you won't forget about the mitzvah. We're not getting into the actual if you have to do it. The question is biblically, was it only as long, why do you have to give true mitzvah? Because the land is holy. Maybe the land's only holy when we live there.
Right.
We made it holy by conquering it. We said it's a holy land. Fine. Maybe it's only holy when Jews live there. And when they're gone, it's not holy. Or no, maybe once we made it holy, it's always holy. That's question number one. In regard to the sanctity of the temple site, the question relates to whether the temple site in Jerusalem retains its sanctity even after the temple is destroyed. Then, do the various laws of offerings that apply only at the temple site remain in force even during the period of the temple's destruction? And maybe you have to do things anyway, even though there's no base of mitzvahs, even though there's no harabais, it's still holy, and you can do holy things there. Practical applications will be discussed below. The two questions are not interdependent. Thus, for example, one could hold that the requirement to separate Trumas and Maaser might still be biblically enforced today because of the sanctity of the land, but that Maaser Sheni, which is separated, cannot be in Yerushalayim because the sanctity of the temple was suspended. Could be you have to separate Maaser Sheni, but you can't bring it to Yerushalayim. They're not. Each one doesn't go. Has to go both all the way through. You don't have to say, "Well, the land is always holy, and therefore Jerusalem must always be holy." No, the base of Israel is holy. No, maybe the land is holy, but if you don't have a temple, there's no holiness by the temple area. Rabbi Shmuel in the Brisa, this is our Brisa, clearly holds that the sanctity land of Israel is still in force nowadays. Why? For since he discusses whether it may be permitted to bring Maaser in Jerusalem and eat it there, he has to hold that the sanctity is there. If there was no sanctity anymore, why would you even think of bringing Maaser in Jerusalem at all? So he must hold that the land is still holy forever. His uncertainty as to the permissibility of eating it hinges on what the status of Yerushalayim is nowadays. That was his uncertainty. Right? You understand why it's a question. I know the land obliges me to bring Yerushalayim, but do I have any holiness in Yerushalayim that I can do the next step or not? He wasn't sure. Nevertheless, Rabbi Shmuel takes for granted that a bechor may not be eaten nowadays in Yerushalayim. Well, why is he taking that for granted? Must be there's no holiness anymore. Well, if there's no holiness for Bechor, then I guess there's no holiness for Maaser Sheni. So what's your question? That's what the Gemara is asking now. If you're telling me you have a doubt by one, but not why do I not have a doubt by Bechor? Well, I'll tell you why. Because the Temple Mount isn't holy anymore. I can't bring it anymore.
It's not there.
But even if it's not there, there's still holiness.
Yeah.
So just go put up a mizbech.
Yeah.
What if I want to just put up a mizbech?
Yeah.
Just put up a mizbech.
Are you saying put a mizbech up there?
Yeah. So the mizbech is destroyed. Big deal. I can't put up a mizbech.
Yeah.
Just put up a mizbech. Yeah. I know where the Temple Mount is. I go to the mikvah, put up a mizbech, and do it.
That's right.
But it only works if it's still holy. If the Temple Mount area, but what if the Temple Mount area is not holy anymore? If it's not holy anymore, you can't do anything.
Next time I go, I can go walk around the temple.
Can you go up there?
Well, that's not so simple because you have to go to a mikvah. It's not so simple. It's not so simple nowadays. Okay, it's not so simple. All I'm saying is, how can you doubt one and not be sure while the other it's clear what the law is? You're for sure telling me, I have no question, a bechor you can't bring.
Right.
Why? Well, I guess the only reason is because it's not a holy area anymore. Okay, why are you in doubt now if I bring Maaser Sheni there?
Yeah.
Now, if you're going to say, well, I really hold that wholeness is there. That's why you bring Bechor. Well, if that's the case, then bring Ma'aser Shein. What's your question?
Yeah.
If you have a doubt, it means I'm not sure if the wholeness is there. Well, if you're not sure, then why are you so sure about Bechor? You shouldn't be sure about Bechor either.
That's right.
That's Gemara's question, and saying, why are you asking any question? Umay kasavar, what do you hold? And that's where we'll pick it up tomorrow to start with that. Now you at least have the background to understand the question.
Do you want me to drop anything else?